Good morning and welcome to Crosslink Radio. This is Shirley Gutkowski, your host of the radio show, the podcast that talks about health from the eye teeth on down. It is another opportunity today. We're having another opportunity today to talk about orofacial myofunctional therapy, orthodontics, braces, and all of the machinery that goes along with health. As I'm going further and further into this little odyssey here, I am finding more and more opportunities to say to myself, oh my God, everything like centers like right in the throat. It just kind of all health starts there. As I'm looking at faces now, I just see a lot of faces that could use some conversation about airway or braces or something like that. I hope I don't turn into a snob, but the chance is pretty high. But it's been a very, very exciting odyssey that I'm doing here. In February, which currently, as we are recording this episode, we are going to be celebrating World Day of OM Science on February 17th. So stay tuned for a two-hour special on oral facial myofunctional therapy and how it relates to health from a bunch of different aspects. So that two-hour special will be coming up on February 17th, or if you're listening to this after February 17th, go back to crosslinkradio.com and take a listen to that interview, to that program. And then I also have a bunch of expanded interviews with each of those guests there. So you'll have an opportunity to really take a deep dive into this topic as I have been doing. So today's guest is an orthodontist that I met at the World Congress, not the World Congress, the AAMS, the Academy of Applied Myofunctional Sciences, back in September. And he made a spicy comment about chewing gum. And if you've been following me at all, you know that I love chewing gum and what the benefits of chewing gum can be. And he, well, there were scowls in the room, so I asked him to please come on here onto the podcast and talk about chewing gum and orthodontics and all of that that goes along with it. And his name is Dr. Mike Mew. He is one of a few third-generation orthodontists. His grandfather was deeply influenced by Weston Price and was undertaking courses of interventive expansion for four-year-olds nearly 100 years ago. So that's pretty amazing right there. His father took this concept to a new level, developing orthotropic systems, suggesting that malocclusion was almost entirely an environmental condition and proposing the tropic premise in an effort to create a system concept which treats the causes, not the symptoms, of the problem of malocclusion. Given this background, Mike had dedicated his life to improving the orthotropic treatment system, namely making it more easy, user-friendly, effective, and well-known, all while also integrating it into the broader of perspective of general medical issues, body posture, and understanding its relevance to specific conditions such as sleep apnea and many ENT problems. Dr. Mew is currently working on a deeper understanding of the venous drainage of the cerebral area, issues known as CCSVI, in an effort to understand how this may be disrupted by poor craniofacial structure and posture, and also its effect on various movement disorders and related problems. He works in a clinic in South London where he was arguably gaining the best facial changes yet achieved, and is progressively adapting his therapy from children to adults. He has vowed to consider any therapy, however strange it may appear on the surface. Yay, for you never know where the next nugget of information can come from. And I guess that's kind of our topic of the day. Hi, Dr. Mew. How are you?
Very well, thank you very much.
Awesome. I'm so excited about talking about chewing gum with somebody besides just me. It just seems like a very, very, very underutilized treatment therapy. And It came into my kind of sphere with xylitol a few years ago, obviously, and it's taken on a different kind of a life, although the research is still sporadic on chewing gum. And so I'm kind of curious how you're using it and why, and how did that start for you?
Well, as ever, the most important thing when you're trying to treat something is to ask the question, what caused it? And my concern often with the general orthodontic problems is we're not asking that question enough. The assumption is made that malocclusion, which is crooked teeth and jaw relationship problems, always has a strong genetic influence. And yet, it doesn't come up in the research. The evidence almost exclusively points to an environmental cause. We then have to ask, okay, if the environment's being influential, what bits of the environment, what factors are important? And things that come up strongly tend to be a change in muscle function. Basically, our ancestors had a really tough, hard, low-calorific diet. Food they had was, you know, was nothing like what we have today.
Right.
We've moved across now to a very soft, calorie-rich diet. It's estimated that most kids in a modern Western society, like the United States or Europe, could probably survive calorifically purely on the drinks that they consume. Now, that would be a sea change.
Right.
In muscular output. And when you look at the wear that was evident on our ancestors' teeth, this really does point to this sea change in muscular effort. I estimate that we're making about 2 to 3, possibly at the outside, 5% of the muscular effort our ancestors made. Now, there's clearly an influence for the tongue function and the tongue posture as well. Change in tongue function and tongue posture, though, with myotherapy and some forms of orthodontics, it's completely achievable, but it's also quite difficult. Getting kids to chew gum to replace this lack of effort seems to be a great deal easier. So my suggestion is we should at least consider chewing more.
I agree. I'm on a mission to get people to chew. It's crazy how, you know, you were saying how we could get all of our daily calories from just whatever we're drinking already. And there's a push here. I don't know how big it is over in the UK, but to do smoothies and to juice your fruits and vegetables. And I'm like, what is happening here? Why is this going on? And what are the true ramifications of not chewing? And nobody seems to be interested in that.
No, I mean, it does seem strange. Almost seems crazy if I suggest that it was common for people up till, this is the proletariat, not the wealthy few, the proletariat, the average common person in the street, right up till the medieval period, it was not uncommon for them to wear the first permanent molar down so far that it broke into its roots.
Ow.
Now, that was not everyone, but that was not uncommon in the fourth decade of life. And the life expectancy was somewhere between 35 and 45 years. And remember, this was 35 or 40 good years of almost perfect health.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they had a tough life, they had a tough diet. But all intents and purposes, these people had a perfectly healthy, very happy, satisfied life, which is a great change from how most people live today. And of course, I'm interested in the co-relationships with crooked teeth and other health issues. I guess that's a slightly other story. But I do think that we need to grab the low-lying fruit.
Right.
If we can implement change on a national level a preventative change, then I think we would be doing the benefit of the health of the nation a great service.
I agree. I especially like your comment about how people in the past, although they may not have lived as long, technically speaking, they had a better, healthier life. If they made it past 40, they weren't assured of a cancer diagnosis in the next 15 years. They weren't assured of autoimmune diseases in the next short amount of time. They weren't, you know, they weren't assured of all of these other kind of conditions that it seems like everybody that's over 40 seems to have now. There are people on their fourth surgeries for whatever, and they're 50 years old. I'm like, how is that possible? How many surgeries can a person have? And why is that the quick answer? And what's going on? I'm not saying that chewing is the answer to everything, but we should be wondering aloud what is going on.
Yeah, I mean, and when you ask for research on chewing, I think the best research has been done by Stavros Kliotis, who now at last count, I talked to him, he was the professor at Geneva of Orthodontics in Switzerland. He did do a lot of research. I think the problem he found, again, is this motivation to changing the person. If we consider malocclusion is largely an environmental condition, that means it's largely the individual who controls their environment that has to change. And it's a tough thing to do. Changing people is not easy. And this is where what Stavros ran into. Actually getting people motivated enough, I think most of his studies only went as far as 3 months of intensive chewing. And they had little effect. But I had a fascinating result. It's about a year ago. I had a dentist who had returned back to Ireland, and about 4 years before, he had come and worked with us. He had trained in our practice, and I don't think he ever really grasped the orthotropics to a high enough level to go and practice it, but he gained, I think, some useful lessons and some useful knowledge. And he brought his 8-year-old daughter in to see me. Now, it's rare that I ever say someone's perfect. We have to remember that only 5% of the population in Sweden in the, what was it, 90s, when Apaka and Atkinson did their research, have ideal occlusion. Now, this girl had ideal occlusion. Now, that is rare. She had a great facial form and fantastic muscle tone. And it's a real rarity that someone like this walks into my dentist's office. And I said, Seamus, I said, you know, she's an outsider. She's really in good state. You know, she clearly doesn't need any form of therapy. I said, you know, how was that? How did you achieve that? You know, was that random? And Seamus, in this wonderful Irish lilt, turned around to me. I won't try the accent, but he turned around and said to me, well, Mike, from the first evening I returned home, having worked in your clinic 4 years ago, she has chewed gum 1 hour at least every single day. Now, she was 4 years old at the time, and from 4 years old to 8 years old of chewing 1 hour every single day, she heard, I don't know, obviously I have no idea what she looked like at the beginning, but right. He said that she had mild deciduous crowding. And she now had, a fantastic facial form. And then my sister is a physiotherapist. So she's very used to enforcing exercise routines. In fact, she was the lead physio for the Paralympics at home. So she's a good physio.
She's fancy.
Hmm?
She's fancy.
This is my, very fancy. So she asked me some time ago to look at her son. At the time, it was my nephew, he was a little bit more than 4. He was coming up for 4 and a half at the time, because it was a year and a half ago, and he just celebrated his 6th birthday. So, she said, have a look here. And he had very little space between his deciduous upper centrals. Now, my grandfather was taught that you should have, 4 years old, you should have space for a half crown between all of your upper incisors and the canine. Now that's about the size and width of a British pound, so it's about 2-2.5 millimeters thick. And my grandfather was taught that you would do a burst of expansion at that moment at 4 years old. And I've always remembered that. So I look at my nephew and he's got almost no space to see his deciduous incisors. Mm-hmm. You know, they look lovely, but the horses actually not how they should look. They should have big spaces. So I said to my sister, I said, look, the last thing I want to have to do is treat your kids. The treatment I do is incredibly difficult and hard work. And I know that, you know, they'll never respond to me in the same way that my patients who don't know me would respond to me. So I said, look, Rosie, I told her the story I've just said to you. And I said, right, you need to start instigating an hour of chewing gum every day. You need to buy chewing gum by the bucket load, have it all over the house and in the car, and implement some exercise. I said, you're a physiotherapist, you should be able to do this without problems. And to her word, she instigated chewing. Now, both of them, look, I should have taken some good photographs. I took a little Instamatic photo on the phone photo, but spaces are opening up in the teeth. Their faces are squaring up. They look notably better. And that's in a year and a half. Now, they've got a whole life ahead of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you only have to get a little bit better every year to put yourself in a significantly better place 10 years down the line. And it's such a simple message. Now, again, a lot of people ask me what type of chewing gum they should chew. And there are some tough chewing gums on the market. And yes, you can buy them. We're developing a chewing gum, although of course these things take so much longer to do than you always imagine. But the other thing is you can use several sticks of chewing gum. I've tried chewing 7 sticks in one go. That's a whole packet. You open a packet, you open every single stick, you put it in your mouth, and you then need to keep your lips together. This is important because this is a huge amount of myofunctional therapy going in one go. And often to remind kids, what I recommend they do is they take a little bit of microfore tape and they run it down vertically one side of their nose so it crosses their lips. And that can act as a reminder to remind them to keep their lips together. So you then just get them to chew and chew, you know, for 1 or 2 hours.
I think that's amazing. I think you're probably right on, and I can't wait to see more published research on it, only to help convince other people. This lack of chewing is a problem, and like I said, nobody's talking about it. When I talk about chewing gum, though, and people right away, I don't know where this comes from, they talk about TMD and being detrimental to the temporomandibular joint, and then they also talk about you're not allowed to chew gum with braces. So your method, though, what you just described, was to chew the gum before the braces ever even get talked about, and noticing these conditions in very small children and getting them up to speed with the chewing gum in advance. So does that early start mitigate the temporomandibular joint issues that potentially could come up, or how does that go?
Yeah, you brought up a big red herring here. Okay, so we've been anatomical humans for 220,000 years. That's a mind-boggling length of time.
Right.
That is about 14,000 generations. When you think that Columbus arrived in North America only about 14, 15 generations ago, it gives you some idea of how long ago that was. Now, we always wore our teeth down 20 times more than we do now, suggesting that our ancestors had a vast amount more chewing than they did. So then we ask ourselves, how come there is no evidence looking at the fossils that they ever had any temporomandibular problems? And yet, modern humans, with a tiny little bit of chewing, could get temporomandibular problems. So what's going on? Clearly something else is going on. Now, I think temporomandibular problems are basic and simple. People tend to leave their teeth slightly apart with the tongue between the teeth. They lack tongue space, so the tongue would otherwise be back in their airway. And of course, having a patent and comfortable airway is vitally important to these individuals.
Right.
They put their tongue between their teeth, that rest, so the jaw is propped open for 5 millimeters even, maybe a little bit less. The jaw joint then reforms to that position. Consequently, when they bring their teeth together, now the jaw joint is further superior and posterior in the glenoid fossa, exactly what you see in people with temporomandibular dysfunction and problems. Then also, you have to ask yourself, what is the reciprocal muscle for the jaw closing muscles? What muscle reciprocates these massive, great big closing muscles? Well, actually, when you think about it, it can only be the tongue. In the entire rest of the body, everywhere, whenever there's a muscle working across a joint, it has a reciprocal muscle that works against that muscle. If I lift my finger, if I lift my knee, particularly if I lift my knee.
Yeah.
So you think I lift my knee up. As I lift my knee up, my quads lift my leg up with the knee. But my glutes are still doing something. Then, when I put my knee back down again, my quads have to still work a little bit as my glutes pull my knee back down again. So clearly, those muscles are always working slightly with each other. So, when we think about the oral system, at rest, with the teeth near or in contact, which I think is normal, I don't think we should have a three-way space, because if we put the tongue on the lip in there, that is sustained by having the tongue on the roof of the mouth acting as the antagonistic muscle to the jaw closing muscles. Now, if the tongue's low, it's not on the roof of the mouth. Consequently, as soon as the masticatory muscles are stimulated by any form of force, any sort of stress, any initiation, which I think is normal for that to occur, because they lack their antagonistic muscle, then they go into an uncontrolled contraction. There's no muscle to calm them down. The natural antagonist is lying down in the mouth, probably between the teeth. So, or well, not between the teeth when they're grinding, but they'll grind, and there's nothing to stop them grinding.
Right.
It's a runaway system. So you need the tongue up in the roof of the mouth to calm that down. Now, if you've got the tongue in your roof of the mouth, then you can have your teeth together in what we refer to as butterfly bite. Now, my biggest difference of opinion with myofunctional therapists is freeway space. I think the teeth should be in or near contact, in what I refer to as a butterfly bite. And if you have the tongue fully engaged on the roof of the mouth, this is perfectly feasible, without ever causing any problem in the jaw joints. In fact, it's because the tongue's not engaged that you get this overrun. Because the tongue's between the teeth, the jaw joints don't quite match the biting position. And that inherently is why we get these jaw joint problems. It's not the gum that's causing the problem. It's the tongue that's causing the problem.
Right. And so if you're chewing the gum and you're an adult and you have habituated an improper tongue movement during chewing or even at rest, your gum chewing, yes. And the gum chewing, though, will cause an inflammation there because everything is wrong in the whole cycle.
If the jaw joint is designed in a position where the teeth are separated by, 3 to 5, even more millimeters, then when you bring your teeth together, the jaw joint's not in a good balanced position. And that is inherently jaw joint problems. There, in a nutshell, so simple.
Well, that answers a lot of questions for me. Not that I have TMJ disorders, but there are a lot of people out there who have the problem, and I'm wondering how, as a brand new OMT therapist or OM therapist, how I would approach those people. But this whole tongue placement thing really kind of addresses it from what you're explaining.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you have someone with acute temporomandibular dysfunction, mm-hmm. it's invaluable to have a splint, for a period of time to get them relaxed, out of pain, and allow the acute phase inflammatory reactions to subside. I think those are invaluable. But I don't think that they should be left. As soon as you can, the bite height should be gently reduced back to an intercuspal position, and proper tongue placement taught. Now, of course, if you lack space for the tongue to go on the roof of the mouth, then we have other issues.
That's another problem. Yeah. So I noticed in the notes here that you made a distinction between myofunctional therapy and myopostural therapy. Posture was a term that came up quite often, actually, at that AAMS meeting. And I'm curious to know how you make a distinction. We've got maybe 4 minutes left in this interview. So if you have a couple comments on that.
Well, clearly posture is far more influential on bony development and tooth position than function. I think that we've all focused too much on the word function and how people function, and we've forgotten posture. Now, of course, posture and function are very closely related, and you can't affect one without affecting the other.
Sure.
But I don't think there's time to describe it in detail, but we should look more at posture. I make heavy emphasis in my videos on the posterior third of the tongue. We have a lot on the Orthotropics YouTube page, and I discuss it in more detail. But it's posture more than function that's vital for form.
So the OMTs that I've talked to, or even just some of the videos that I've seen on YouTube, not yours, talk about release of the tongue tie and how that affects the posture. I was talking to an orthodontist at the meeting who was talking about orthotropics and posture. And so the tongue is kind of the rudder of the whole spine, I guess. And working together with a chiropractor or someone in that neighborhood of education would be really beneficial, sounds like.
Yeah, I think we need to understand these things more. Mm-hmm. In my book, if you can't get the maxilla up and forwards a significant amount, you're limited in the help you can give someone. And once you can achieve that, you can rebuild them in a new position. And I think that it's going to be a team approach that will gain that change in maxillary position. And as yet, I don't think we're getting enough change on people. I really don't. And I look around and I'm seeing the facial forms before and after treatment. And I think we need to go a lot. We've got so much more work to do, and we have got a long way to go.
We do. And going to children and doing this preventively at the very earliest stages, I think, is really, really critical. And this chewing in childhood, the early xylitol studies had children as young as 18 months chewing gum. So this is a teachable activity to small children. And if you're not going to cook food that takes time to chew, then chewing gum should definitely be included. And really, if it's only an hour a day's worth, that's not very much, is it?
No, I think that's a minimum amount. I mean, you know, I would chew gum all the time if I could. And in the position I am, I'm quite happy to chew gum during the day treating my patients, since they're all fully aware that I'm recommending it to them. And we need to break this. Another problem with chewing gum was the fact that we, before we realized that stomach ulcers were caused by some spirochetal bacteria, we were paranoid about causing stomach ulcers. And there was definitely a link between chewing gum and stomach ulceration. I don't think this is that common with kids, but that was a paranoia.
Yeah.
And that was a paranoia. People. That was a stigma attached to chewing gum that it may cause stomach ulceration. Now, we need to move ahead. Science has shown that we can cure stomach ulcers, and it wasn't possibly the biggest cause of them anyway.
Crazy. Thank you so much, Dr. Mew. This was very enlightening, and I think people will be spreading this episode of CrossLink Radio to all of their friends, and I'm glad that we were able to connect and you took time out of your busy, super busy schedule over there.
Well, we're the time difference. I'm about to finish up the day and enjoy the weekend, so
awesome.
That's fine. It's a pleasure speaking to you. Do what I'm doing, because I want the answers. I want to find the truth, and I'm going to stop at nothing to find it. My two rules in life, the oaths I've taken, is to look under every stone to see if I can find some gem to help me help patients.
Mm-hmm.
And I will change what I do, the treatment I provide, based on the evidence I find. And there's a difficult thing to hold myself to, but that is what I intend to do, and I intend to, I want answers. I want to find the truth. I want to help people.
Yeah, there's no better way to do it than that, and to ask some really pointy kind of questions, which is what you're doing, and trying to get new answers.
The trouble with so many groups is everyone trying to be so polite and nice, and we forget you can't prove anything. You can only disprove things.
There you go.
Now, to disprove things, you need to ask tough questions. You need to say, yes, I like you. You're my friend. But prove that point. I think you're wrong.
That's not easy either. Thank you
it's
so much. Have a great weekend. And I
thanks very much.
Your time. Take care now. Bye now. Bye. That was Dr. Mike Mew from the UK. He's practicing in London, and he is asking some pointy questions and getting some really kind of pointy answers that has everybody's eyebrows up. So that's pretty awesome. Thank you again to Dr. Mew. Have a great rest of the day, everybody, and make sure to share these episodes so that other people can be enlightened or at least ask some questions on their own. Have a great rest of the day, everybody.